Hey guys, this is Anna. So before we get on with the show today, let's hear from our sponsor.
Hey everybody, this is Dorian Blaine for Transgender Christian, and I am your host, Anna Hudak. So today, before we get on with today's topic, which is part five of Rosa Luxemburg's 1905 article, Socialism and the Churches, there is something, a quick little housekeeping that I need to do today because, you guys deserve to know. You are my loyal listeners, and therefore you deserve to know what's going on with the podcast. So we are changing things up again. It is now fall. The sun is going down earlier. The sun is coming up later. The days are getting shorter, basically. Hopefully I'll have a job soon. Hopefully. Already with just how short the days are getting, especially right now when it's fall, it's like raining all the time, so I rarely ever have good lighting anyways. Even worse, it's made even worse, that is, and winter's always just gloomy, Fact is, we gotta change things up, during the fall and winter. So I think I'm probably gonna be putting the Gender Accelerationist Manifesto on hold until next spring, most likely. So what we've been doing, as you probably know, for the last few months here on Thursday episodes, has been much more topical. We take a certain topic, first with stuff like suicide or, feeling alone, then we dove into this series, Socialism and the Churches. I definitely want to heat that up. I think that's going to be a spring and summer thing, when I actually have some sunlight throughout the day. During the fall and winter, probably going to have to change it up. What we're probably going to end up having to do is make Thursdays a shorter episode. It's basically going to be Monday episode. It's basically gonna be like it was before we started doing this topical thing. Just basically Monday episodes, except shorter, basically. Just shorter Monday episodes, really. We're still gonna have a full length regular Monday episode, where we could dive into everything, But Thursday is probably going to be shorter. Maybe it'll just be me reacting to a single article or just kind of talking about some things going on in my life. We're still going to have Patreon exclusive episodes on Mondays. Those are pretty damn short. I know it's been a few weeks since I've done one. I will do one next week. This has been very rough the last few weeks to get anything done. But yeah, anyway, we are going to be starting on that. We are going to be changing that as soon as this series is over, which should be next week. So after next week, unfortunately, we're just going to be putting the Gender Accelerationist Manifesto on hold because once again, there's just not enough sunlight at the end of the day to be able to continue doing all of this in a 1 week. So until then, so yeah, we're gonna have to wait till next spring, unfortunately. And we're just gonna be doing shorter Monday episodes on Thursdays. So, anywho, that's what we're gonna be doing for now. So, but here's the thing. If you guys really do want me to continue doing this, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I could be convinced into continuing to do this if you guys really want me to, if I hear enough people doing it, asking me to do it. But otherwise, I'm being honest, especially because, I'm not making any money off of this whatsoever, I love doing this, but I also have to be aware that, I only have so much time. I desperately need a job, and once I get a job, that's gonna be my main thing, as opposed to this, I'm still gonna be focusing on building this podcast, don't get me wrong, this is my passion. But at the same time, I also need time to relax during the day, and if time is already getting short on, how much sunlight I have during the day, like right now it's very gloomy, like It's just hard, getting hard to be able to move us in during the day because, I spend a lot of my days at the library searching for jobs, working on the podcast, and doing other stuff. So, anyway, I hope you kind of get what I'm saying, I'm already doing a lot during the day and just, yeah, it's just, especially when the days are getting shorter, it's just hard to be able to do this, do several, like hour long episode, 45 minute to hour long episodes a week doing this. So, anywho, that's everything I got for that. I guess we should continue on. Let's dive on in. So yes, so as usual, you can find a link to the article that we are discussing, Socialism in the Churches, in the show notes or YouTube description, depending how you're watching or listening to this. And yeah, so part five, Socialism in the Churches. Let's dive right on in. Thus were the relations between the church and the people modified with the passage of time. Christianity began as a message of consolation to the disinherited and the wretched. It brought a doctrine which combated social inequality and the antagonism between rich and poor. It taught the community of riches. Soon, this temple of equality and fraternity became a new source of social antagonisms. Having given up the struggle against individual property, which was formerly carried on by the early apostles, the clergy itself gathered riches together. It allied itself with possessing classes who lived by exploiting the labor of the toiling class. In feudal times, the church belonged to the nobility, the ruling class, and fiercely defended the power of the latter against revolution. So yeah, so basically as a quick recap, for those who may not exactly remember everything that happened in previous series, or those who just joined this past week. Basically, the early church, back when it was the apostles running it. All the Christians held everything in common. And I mean everything in common. All of our money, all of our property, everything was held in common. Food held in common, everything. Because back then, there was no working class. You had, basically the rich in society who held everything. They had all the property, all the food, all the clothing, everything. There was nothing that they did not have. There was, basically average Joe who were basically just poor beggars who may or may not have homes, literally just waiting for the government to be kind enough to give them some food that day. Or, let's be honest, more like probably every few weeks. And then there was the people who actually did all the work, which was the slaves. The slaves did everything. The average Joe did nothing. There was nothing they could do. Everything was basically done by the slaves. And that's how, so, nobody had anything unless they were rich. And Christianity, it taught that the rich were expected to give the poor things, literally Christianity taught back then, it was, the poor, they could just go up to a rich dude, who's in the church and demand, food, clothing, property, whatever. And the rich guy was expected to give it to them. It was done as a consolation for the poor, It was, hey, we're here to uplift you. But as time went on, especially when Christianity became, the state religion, you got in bed with government. It started becoming in bed with the rich, especially as, and it was just, it didn't really benefit them that much. To, demand the rich to get to the poor because a lot of these clergy were starting to get rich now. And then they started oppressing the poor in the churches and they started telling the poor that they had to give up stuff. Not the rich people, the poor poor people were expected to give up tithes and stuff like that. And they became basically the new oppressors in society, especially as they, in many areas, became the government. And they became arguably some of the greatest exploiters of the working class that ever existed. You know, and they constantly were condemning the poor, you know, the working class for wanting things better. They straight out condemned them. You know. Anyway, so just a little catch up for you. But continuing on. At the end of the 18th century and the beginning of the 19th century, the people of Central Europe swept away serfdom and the privileges of the nobility. At that time, the church allied itself afresh with the dominant classes, with the industrial and commercial bourgeoisie. Okay, so for those who do not know, for those who may be new to Marxism or just don't know Marxist lingo, or bourgeoisie are basically those who hold the means of production. You know, like for basically like the factory owners. You know, stuff like that. You know, vertical. You know, like yeah. I think that's probably the best way to think of it. You know, probably the easiest thing for people to grasp is like a factory owner as bourgeoisie, because if you're a factory owner, you are the one who owns the machinery that makes the stuff. The workers there don't. The workers have no say in what they produce, how they use the machines that day. You know, if you're a worker, right, you don't own anything from that company. You don't own any of the means of production, which are the machines in that factory. The person who owns the factory does. They own all of it. Therefore, they are the bourgeoisie, aka, you know, owners of the means of production. You know, that does apply to many other fields, but I feel like factory is probably just the easiest, the easiest example to understand. But anyway, but yeah, so basically, you know, so the church, you know, as capitalism rose and feudalism fell, the church realized they needed to stay in power. Well, they couldn't stay in, you know, sticking around with the nobility. Wasn't gonna work because in a lot of these places, the nobility had no power anymore. So they had to become friends with the owners of the means of production, the capitalist class. You know, they had to get in bed with, you know, the real estate owners. They had to get in bed with the factory owners. They had to get in bed with, those in charge of, you know, whatever, you know. The banks, trying to think, you know, whatever, you know, anything, any, you know, trying to think, you know, but yeah. Today, the situation, anyway, continuing on. Today, the situation has changed and the clergy no longer possess great estates, but they own capital which they try to make productive by the exploitation of the people through commerce and industry, as do the capitalists. Yeah. The Catholic Church in Austria possessed, according to its own statistics, a capital of more than 813 million crowns, of which 30 million, sorry, 300 million were in arable lands and in property, 387 million in debentures, and further, it lent at interest a sum of 70 million to factory owners and businessmen. And that is how the church, adapting itself to modern times, changed itself into an industrial and commercial capitalist from being a feudal overlord. As formerly, as it continues to collaborate with the class which enriches itself at the expense of the rural proletariat. For those who don't know what proletariat is, that means working class. You know. But yeah, so basically, instead of, you know, being oftentimes the government themselves or owning a lot of land or, you know, just being really good friends with the nobility, Now, instead, they started paying off, you know, investing into these factory owners and, you know, other businesses that exploited the proletariat, aka working class. You know, and basically they became, you know, defenders of the oppression. You know, they wanted to make sure that they were on their side, you know, make sure they didn't lose any favor by giving them goods, you know, the bourgeoisie, great sums of money to continue oppressing the proletariat. Pretty fucking evil stuff. Continuing on. This change is even more striking in the organization of convents. In certain countries, such as Germany and Russia, the Catholic cloisters have been suppressed for a long time. But where they still exist, in France, Italy, and Spain, all evidence points to how enormous is the part played by the church in the capitalist regime. In the Middle Ages, the convents were the refuge of the people. It was there that they sought shelter from the severity of lords and princes. It was there that they found food and protection in the case of extreme poverty. The cloisters did not refuse bread and nourishment to the hungry. Let us not forget, especially that the Middle Ages knew nothing of the commerce as such as it's usual in our days. Every farm, every convent produced in abundance for itself thanks to the labor of serfs and craftsmen. Often the provisions and reserve found no outlet. When they had produced all more corn, more vegetables, more wood than was needed for the consumption of the monks, the excess had no value. There was no buyer for it, not all products could be preserved. In these conditions, the convents freely looked after the poor, in any case offering them only a small part which had been of what had been extracted from their serfs. This was the usual custom in this period, and nearly every farm belonging to the nobility acted similarly. So basically, back then, capitalism wasn't a thing, you know. You didn't have, you know, supermarkets. You know, you didn't really, I don't think you really even had markets, really, did you back then? I don't know. At least not, you know, like big food markets. Basically, everybody was a farmer, you know, for pretty much for the most part, you know. There's, you know, a few like blacksmiths or whatever, you know, maybe a few shoemakers, but let's be honest, just about everybody was a fucking farmer. And basically, you farmed for yourself, you know. You had, you know, some food for yourself, but most of it went to the lords or the church. You know, and you know, the lords and the church could only eat so much. So much of it went to waste. You know, but most of your food went to them, let's be honest, you know. Especially like in the convents, you know. If you worked for the convent, you know, as you know, a farmer for them. You know, the nuns or the monks there only needed so much. And so there's a whole lot left over. But, you know, they didn't have a Walmart or a Meijer or a Kroger to sell this produce to that would get sold out again to the public. You know, they didn't have that. So, therefore, they would give it to the poor, those who had nothing, you know, those who were starving, because, well, it was what's left over, and they had abundance of it, so why not? You know, it's not like they were gonna eat it. And that's how pretty much it worked back then. Continuing on. In fact, the cloisters profited considerably from this benevolence. Having the reputation of opening their doors to the poor, they received large gifts and legacies from the rich and powerful. With the appearance of capitalism and production for exchange, every object acquired a price and became exchangeable. Yeah, so basically, back then, you know, it's not like they were gonna have any food, you know, they couldn't sell the food to, you know, some supermarket to get a profit off of. So they're more than willing just to give it, because why not? You know, it's not like they were gonna gain anything off of it other than goodwill. You need, let's be honest, goodwill meant a lot back then. Especially once, you know, especially once reformers really started showing up across on the scene. You know, gotta get the people happy, gotta get the people in the Catholic Church. But then, you know, when capitalism showed up, and everything is a price, you know, everything is sellable. All of a sudden, her generosity dies up. Quite interesting, isn't it? And instead, they decided, you know what I want? I want more money because I don't have enough already, you know? And therefore, they stop being generous with the food because why would they when they could make a profit off of it, you know? You know, if people are gonna die, you know, and die of hunger, well, too bad for them, you know? Shouldn't be hungry, you know? Should have pulled herself up by the bootstraps, you know? You know, this is what you should have done, you know? Should have just pulled yourself up by the bootstraps. Should have gotten yourself, you know, a nice job, you know? And yeah, it's kind of your fault for starving, you know? For not being able to afford this food, which should not be for sale, you know? Should just be something given. You know, everybody should have food to eat. Regardless of your status in society or whether you work or not. But, you know, no, we had to have a price for it. And therefore, you know, you gotta work to eat now, guys. You know, that's the right way to do things, apparently. Yeah. Interesting. Interesting ideas. When I say interesting, I mean very dangerous ideas. That destroy society, unfortunately. Because the reality is, you should not be having to work to survive. It's fucking bullshit. But yeah, what do I know? Continuing on, where was I? Okay, yeah, so. At this moment, the convents and the houses and the lords and ecclesiastics for benefactions. The people found their interests. Sorry, the people found no refuge anywhere. Here is one reason, among others, why at the beginning of capitalism in the 18th century, when the workers were not yet organized to defend their interests, there appeared poverty so appalling that humanity seemed to have gone back to the days of the decades of the Roman Empire. But while the Catholic Church in former times undertook to bring help to the Roman proletariat by the preaching of communism, equality, and fraternity, in the capitalist period, it acted wholly in a different fashion. It sought above all to profit from the poverty of the people, to put cheap labor to work. In other words, instead of just, you know, giving people things they needed to survive, like they should, you know, as the church, they decided, you know what? You know what we should do? We should exploit these people ourselves for profit. Make money off these people who are about to starve to death or freeze to death on the streets. That's what we should do. You know? These, you know, the homeless people exist to be exploited so we can get richer. That's what they did. Continuing on, the convents became literally hells of capitalist exploitation. All the worse because they took in the labor of women and children. The law, a case against the Convent of the Good Shepherd in France in 1903, gave a resounding example of these abuses. Little girls, 12, 10, and 9 years old, were compelled to work in abominable conditions, without rest, ruining their eyes and their health, and were badly nourished and subjected to prison discipline. These 9-year-old girls were treated as subhuman. They were treated basically like worse than basically like chattel slaves, basically. You know, and they got nothing out of this. They literally got nothing out of this except for ruined lives. Meanwhile, the church made money off of them. This is what, yeah, the Catholic Church was doing just even 100 years ago. Probably still are doing it in a lot of places, let's be honest. I just don't know, you know, I just don't want to say 100% for certain because I really don't know much about the Catholic Church. So, especially how we run today. I really know nothing about how it runs today at all. So, anyway. At present, convents are almost entirely suppressed in France, and the church loses the opportunity of direct capitalist exploitation. The tithe, the scourge of the serfs, has likewise long since been abolished. This does not stop the clergy from extorting money from the working class by other methods, and particularly through masses, marriages, burials, and baptisms. And the governments which support the clergy compel the people to pay for tribute. Further, in all countries except the USA and Switzerland, where religion is a personal matter, the church draws from the state enormous sums, which obviously come from the hard labor of the people. And for instance, in France, the expenditure of the clergy amounts to 40 million francs per a year. To sum it up, it is the labor of millions of exploited people which assures the existence of the church, the government, and the capitalist class. The statistics concerning the revenue of the church in Austria give an idea of the considerable wealth of the church, which was formerly the refuge of the poor. 5 years ago, that is in 1900, its annual revenues amounted to 60 million crowns, and its expenditure did not exceed 35 million. Thus, in the course of a single year, it put aside, quote unquote, 25 million at the cost of the sweat and blood shed by the workers. Here are a few details about that sum. The Archbishop of Vienna, with an annual revenue of 300,000 crowns, and the expenses of which were not more than half that sum, made 150,000 crowns of quote unquote savings a year. The fixed capital of the Archbishopric? I have no idea what that is. Amounts to about 7 million crowns. The Archbishopric of Prague enjoys an income of over half a million and has about 300,000 in expenses. Its capital reaches nearly 11 million crowns. The Archbishopric of Olomouc, or Olmütz, has over half a million in revenue and about 400,000 in expenses. Its fortune exceeds 14 million. The subordinate clergy, which often so often pleads poverty, exploits the population no less. The annual incomes of the parish priests of Austria reach more than 35 million crowns. The expenses 21 million only, with the result of the quote unquote savings of the parsons reach nearly 14 million. Their parish properties make up over 450 million. So yeah, basically the priests, and the other the others who work in the parishes who claim that, who are fucking poor, oh, we don't make much money, not exactly. So kind of, 1% of our country. Just basically, they weren't as filthy rich as like the, the archbishops and stuff like that, Basically, they just weren't as exploitative. They weren't quite as filthy rich as, those who were higher up on the chain as they were. But they weren't poor by any means. They weren't struggling for money. It was just lying. They were just greedy bastards, looking to be even more rich. Continuing on. Finally, the convents of 5 years ago, 1900, possessed, with all the expenses deducted, a quote-unquote net revenue of 5 million a year. These riches grew every year, while the poverty of the toilers exploited by capitalism and by the state grew from year to year. In our country and everywhere else, the state of things is exactly as in Austria. And the country she is in is Russia. Anyway, yeah, this was kind of a short episode, but I mean, there wasn't really much to say about this part. But yeah, next week we're going to be finishing it off with parts 6 and 7. And I hope that you join us for that. Thanks for listening, everyone. Hope you all have a wonderful day. Peace.